Okay, so we are in Reish Tamas Gimel Sif Dalid. Actually, as
in the front of
the we can start, go to the front, the Beis Yosef. There is, I guess, in Reish Tamas Gimel Sif Dalid. Just to finish off a little bit from last week. Last week you mentioned some of the issues regarding pushing off two issues to discuss. The issues of pushing off the bris, either if the baby is yellow or if the baby is a chula. So we mentioned last week that there is a machlokas, if the baby has jaundice, is that considered chula shel kol haguf, or is that considered a regular chula? What's the nafkamina? Who cares? So if it's a regular chula, so then as soon as the baby is better, you just go and do the bris right away. If it's a chula kol haguf, so then you would... you would have to wait a full 7 days until you could do the bris. So Sean, this sounds like it's a chola b'chol aguf, right? But we don't, most poskim don't assume that way. Let's assume that no, it's just a regular chola, and you would do it, and you could do the bris as soon as it feels better. Nishmas Safran pointed out that there are some, Shlomo Zalman and Rav Yashiv both say that if it's a very high bilirubin count, such as 20 is the number that they gave, so then you would, that would be considered a chola b'chol aguf, and you would have to wait the 8 days. So I noticed here in the Pesachim Uchus that I quoted from the Tzemach Tzedek that he held that it was Chol HaGuf, that if the baby is jaundiced, that would be considered the whole entire body is sick.
No matter what the bilirubin count.
That was, well, I didn't see the Tzemach Tzedek inside, but the Tzemach Tzedek, the way it's quoted here is just simply...
Tzemach Tzedek? Isn't he Meyer?
No. Tzemach Tzedek is the third Lubavitcher Rebbe.
Probably goes back far enough they weren't even doing bilirubin.
So to the early 1800s, right. So they're not having, he's not having a bilirubin count. He decided if it's yellow, it's considered... So that's a very interesting idea, because the Chabadniks are very strong in following the Pesachim of their... within the limit of their rebbes, and the Tzemach Tzedek was certainly considered an important posek. So I asked Rabbi Brennan if that's the minhag of Bai Chabad. I don't know if you call it machmer or mekel, but are they koshesh for this kashash of the Tzemach Tzedek? And he said sort of. the number that they use is 16. That while most of our psakim are that it's be considered chol b'chol aguf 20, if you said 20, 18 or 20, and up, the Lavager is the number that they use, thinks is 16, which is a little bit more
16. I thought you said
16. Yeah. 16, which is a lower bilirubin count than other people hold. They said if it's a little yellow, so then they would do the bris as soon as it's a little better. But if it's a little more worse. A little more
over 16.
Over 16, which is a number lower than what others use. So they would be machmer or they would wait the duration of that of the seven days, as they would consider it a chola b'chol haguf. Also, I wanted to mention this at some point over Hilchos Mila, but I noticed the Nishmas Avram at the very end of Sif Gimel throws this in and says that if you're postponing a bris, so when do you name the baby? So there's three choices. Four choices. There's as soon as possible, right? If you know the bris is going to be postponed, so then you don't have to wait for 8 days. Some say wait for 8 days, I think. Some say wait for the bris, and some say it depends how long is the bris going to be postponed. So if the bris is going to be postponed, you know, there's a jaundice issue, so you're waiting a few days, or even if you're waiting a week, so the minhag seems to be that you wait for the bris in order to name the baby. But if you're waiting three months, so we had a couple of weeks ago, we discussed the issue of the Cordy hypospadias baby, where the baby needs a surgery, and they're going to use the orla of the bris in order to do that reconstruction. So therefore, you can't do the bris until the baby is 3, 4, 5 months old. So there, I don't know what the minhag is. The psak that I got, the Shlomo Zalman Orbach, is of the opinion to do the naming as soon as possible. Yeah, just do the like you would name a girl. You would name what?
You do it in shul.
Right. You just do it in shul and name the child at that point. So we did that a few times. It's a little bit strange, but that's the din. I don't know the din. There's a bit of a machlokus about that. I think I know someone else who went through this, and their posting said no, you should wait till the bris. And it was like the baby's now like 2.5 months old and doesn't have a name yet. It's a little odd. So at that point, I think they still were going to wait another month or two until the bris was going to be done. So at that point, their posting said Mm-hmm. I'm sure the posting center, they asked for him to say. Mm-hmm. But either way, the baby was given a name prior to the birth.
Now you said you had a case where they did it late and you went through the whole naming ceremony again.
Yeah, so, right. So there's that case. So then when they finally did the bris and the baby was 4 months old or so, so I was going to go meet the family at the hospital. And I realized on my way there, I said, hey, wait a second. Is there, besides the brachos, do we do the ceremony? So Rav Nata Greenblatt, I called Rav Nata Greenblatt, who said that, yes, absolutely, you should bring... You should do another naming ceremony with the brachos and with the wine and everything at that point. What?
Same name.
And they gave the same name, yes.
So according to the Pesachim, you're following it's a month or so, is the cutoff? Is that what you said? I didn't catch it.
I don't know. I didn't see a number. I remember at that point looking into it. I'm not sure I would give a number, as you spoke about in Shal Shus this past week. Real Pesachim don't use numbers. I think the feel that I got was... If you're sort of waiting for the moment, so then wait for the moment and wait for to give the name. But if it is, we know it's not going to be for a little while, mm-hmm. so then you should give the name earlier. Okay, so that was all some leftovers from last week. So we get to Sif Dalid, and Sif Dalid here in the tour is the din of Nolad Kishu Mahal, that the baby is born with a bris. So. That's the medrash by Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was born, so the pasuk says that they saw that he was good, tov ka, and so Rashi gives two explanations of what that is: either that he filled the room with light, or he was born with a bris, or maybe both.
Does it actually happen?
What?
Does it actually happen?
So one second. So that's why. So assume also the medrash says that Moshe's name was Tuvia, which is why our son Tuvia is named Tuvia. He's named after Moshe. My grandfather's name, my mother's father's name is Moshe, but my father's name is also Moshe. So that's why his name is Tuvia. Yes. So it's based on that medrash. Does it actually happen? So Rabbi Ari Leibowitz in a shiur once commented that when he was teaching in high school, a parent came for a parent-teacher conference and sat down and said, you know, Rabbi Leibowitz, I just want you to know before we start that my son was born gemalot. He was born with a bris. So Rabbi Leibowitz said, that's very nice. He still has trouble reading Rashi, and he has to understand those. Like, I'm not sure what the practical...
As a praise for...
right. What the practical ramifications are. They are, in the Nishmas of Ram, he does quote several authorities who say that, modern day, that they never saw it. That they never saw it happen, at least the way that it's described, where it's fully gemalt. I mean, there are... Sometimes it's covered to different extents, and sometimes like part might be and part might not be. It might also be part of this cord hypospadias issue where there's a bent part of it is born abnormally. There's also a suggestion that it might be hidden, that the orla might actually be under and not seen, which is part of the chashash that we're concerned of when figuring out whether to do the bris or not. So the Torah here says, Nolav kishu mal kasav Rabbeinu Yitzchak she'in tzarech lahatif menu dam bris. You don't even have to do a tafas dam bris. Lahatif menu dam bris. V'rif kasav, the ri is in Tosfos. And the rif says that no, that you do need to. V'chein kasav Rabbeinu hai, hachi yas v'chein rabbanon kamay shu tzarech lahatif menu dam bris. That was the minute to do it. Umihu benachas. But they should do it like calmly, and you should like check well. And not to use a tool as that might aggravate the area. We don't make a bracha on this unless you see that there was a hidden orla. You should be careful how you do it, and you should wait a certain amount of time and not be concerned that to get it done on day 8 so that you won't lead to any type of sakana. So the Torah seems to be dealing with different things here, meaning what is it? On one hand, it's not such a big deal to do the... to do a tafas dam bris. On the other hand, if the concern is that it's like hidden, so then it's a bigger deal, right? There's something that you need to somehow get out, and this is already beyond my area of figuring out what it means, but it could be hidden, and therefore it needs to somehow, there would need to be, sounds like a deeper incision, and perhaps more cut out at that point. I mean, the next siman actually talks about Mila Lemaisa, or not tonight, but next week, and what actually needs to be cut off. So Maybe we'll save it for them. But the real din is that needs to the atara, what's known as the atara, needs to be glands, I think is the official scientific term. So it needs to be totally uncovered. So even if you sort of have, so what defines the orla as the orla defines, I think in halacha, and my perception is maybe we'll, this perception might change over the next few weeks, is that the orla is defined as orla if it's covering up the atara, if it's covering up that area. If it's not covering up, so you don't have to worry about it. But there is a concern that it might cover it up in the future. This is actually a common thing, that babies will have a bris, and then it seems like it will sort of come back. So it needs, sometimes you have to bring it back to the moel and have them take a look, make sure everything is growing as it should. So anyway, so if there is sort of an extra amount of skin, there's the Torah saying that one has to be careful. Why is there such a mystery about it? The Gemara itself talks about a nola keshehu moel, and that's mentioned in the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef says, "Beparakav leezer demila in Maseches Shabbos, if l'gut tanayim amrei." There's a machlokas about this milda, and not only is there a machlokas tanayim, there's a machlokas amareim, and as we see here, there's a machlokas rishonim as well, that they had deciding on this psak. So milso pasku Tosos lo kaman da amrei ein sarf lahatif, v'kasvu shekein psak baal hilchus gedolos. That Tosos says not that you need to do a tafas dambris, and he says that the Bahag pasku that way as well. Of Rabbeinu Chananel, pasuk kamanda amar tzarich lahatif, v'chein pasuk harif, v'arambam. So you have the Rif, Rambam, and then you have the Rush also, just to give you the full triple crown. Kasav, he writes the Shita Satosos, the name of the Ri, and then writes the name of the Shita of the Rif, and at the end says that the minug is to do a tafas dambris, even when there is this situation. Okay, there's a couple of more details there about poking around, but maybe it's real mostly just quoting the tour. You can take a look at Sif Hey while we're here, where Kasav Agon Yenuka Demes Velo Havu Le Shmonas Yomin Naginan Demalinan Le Avi Kavra. This is something that happens, that the baby is born or only lives for a few hours. So the minug is a minug from the Gaonim. It's not in the Gemara, but the minug from the Gaonim is to give the baby a bris. The baby should be buried having had a bris done. So the Beis Yosef quotes this from the Kolbo, King Kasava Kolbo, Vizel Shonu Nagu Lamal Ben Shemes Kodum Shiagil Yos Ben Ches. The minhag is to give the bris to the child before 8 days old, but Sur Uvakana. Now, I'm not sure, I couldn't figure out why this is or whether it's the minhag, with a Tsur Kana, with a piece of flint or reed. Yeah. Not sure how it's doable. In fact, the Darkei Moshe here says that he did it. If you look at Bayes, I'm not sure where. Oh, Bayes is coming off the tour. If you look at Darkei Moshe Bayes at the bottom, it says V'chein hu b'maril she'asa meiser b'nolad mahul de'lo barchu al hamila v'hitifu mimenu. Oh, this is actually talking about tafas dambris. That's why it wasn't here. But he did the tafa with his fingernail, right? At dam b'tziporin. He took off a little bit of dam with his fingernail, but that's going in a different spot. That's actually talking about the tafas dambris that he didn't even use a knife in order to take it off. Anyways, for somehow the minute there is this idea of doing it with a reed or a stone. I don't think that's the way that's done today.
Just in this situation.
Yeah, for this situation.
Rather than the regular
right
tool that's normally used.
Yeah. Well, apparently for tafas dambris, the Maril is knowing also not to use a tool, not to use a knife, just use his fingernail.
What would be the logic in that?
I don't know. Maybe we'll figure out in the next siman where we get to the actual mice and Mila.
So there's a number of majestians for a number of people that were born without a parallel.
Okay.
I think Yaakov is Tom. Of course, Noah, Tamim.
Okay.
It's not just Moshe.
Right, okay. I think Moshe is actually mentioned in Rashi. I don't know if those other ones are mentioned.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
So, so why do they do this? Back in the Beis Yosef, it's the reason this is done is to remove the embarrassment from it, so it shouldn't be buried with its orla. It's considered embarrassing. That they would do the bris by the kever. You don't make a brach on it. Umaskin le shemon dechad merach minan le min shemaya v'avi tchias amesim havi yedil letinok umaskin le lahavua. That if there will be tchias amesim, I think what he's saying is that the baby will be able to recognize his father. Not sure how that works. they will be able to recognize each other. That's the next thing. As you give it a name, that he'll be Hashem will have mercy on him. V'yichya b'tchias hamesim, and he'll be able to live with tchias hamesim. V'yibodeya v'yakir es aviv, and he'll have a day, and he'll be able to again this recognize the father thing. There actually, I saw Pesachim Shuvah's quotes that the minog, that there is a minog of naming these children Gershon. Why? Because that's the one who came up with the idea that you should give them a name. That's what it says. V'shem Rabbeinu Gershuni. So there's apparently a particular minog to name these children Gershon. I've heard of not naming him Gershon, I've named other names, but anyways, that apparently that minog is out there. V'goes Maimin Perkidav Mihilchos Mila Kasev Shama Shenagu Lahasir Orlas Hanafalim Bitzura V'Oven V'Humishum Takanas Haposhim Damim Vereishis Rabba Mavir Orlam Min Hakatanim Shemesu V'Lo Malu V'Nosna Al Poshe Yisrael. That they would do it in this way because of the takana of the poshim, those that were sinners, those who made a mistake. But say that in Rishis Rabbah, Maver Orlam Min Hakatanim, I'm not sure, I don't know what this is referring to. Orlam Min Hakatanim, Shemesu Velo Malu, Venosnu Al Poshe Yisrael. They would place them on, they would remove the Orlos from Katanim that died, that didn't have their bris, and they would place them on the sinners of Israel.
Yeah, of course.
So it sounds like some kind of that's a pretty.
I'm not getting it. I'm not figuring out what this is doing here.
This gets out, it would be a corpse abuse.
Yeah. But this isn't a medrash. This isn't. Truth is, they didn't. It wasn't. They weren't buried, right? In the medrash, at that time they were in crypts. So it sounds like in order to demonstrate that these people were bad people, it sounds like they would take orlas and place it on them to show that. I don't think it's done. So those are a couple of the issues. If you take a look at the Shulchan Aruch, so in Sif Dalid it says Nola Kishuhu Mahul, that when the baby was born with this bris, they would take some blood. And again, to this checking thing, you have to be careful about it. Yafi be a dime, v'mari nine, v'lo befarzel, and now with a tool, the lola ayiklei, that they won't disturb it, v'ro v'nizharim heyach malon oso, and they'll see, and be careful how they gave it the bris, u'mamtinen lo harbe. V'ein choshen liyom shmini, shelo yaviyu lidei sakana. We're not concerned about getting it done on day 8, because we don't want to have a sakana. So what's going on here? So we're sort of machmer in both directions. Even though we paskin that it should be done, we are we say, yeah, but you know, we're not going to do it on day 8. Maybe because it doesn't have that type of protection. No. Meaning even if we're going to make sure the baby's totally fine before doing it.
Okay.
I think this is under the assumption that there's more sort of like this question thing of they have to look at it and be careful about it and figure it out. If it really was gemalt, meaning this issue also comes up, that the baby was born and it was circumcised in the hospital. It was just done. So now you have this on day 3. And now you get a couple days later and the parents are like, hey, wait a second, I didn't know circumcised meant a bris, right? I thought that was something else. So now in that situation, I don't think we would say, oh, you got to be careful. We know that there's no orla there, because the orla was taken off. I think what the Shulchan Aruch is talking about.
Right.
Then you do on day 8, and you wouldn't do a bracha. The Shachar points out, you wouldn't make a bracha on it unless you actually see that there's an orla. So the Shulchan Aruch seems to be talking about a case where nothing was done to it. It looks like there's no orla there, but there's a concern that there is sort of an orla underneath and it's going to need some examination. In the modern day case, that's more other than this. Other than this kid and the Rabbi Leibowitz's share, in a normal case today, which is where a circumcision was done earlier by a doctor in the hospital, so I don't think we would have these precautions that are being described here in the Shulchan Aruch. Now there is also a interesting discussion about that not on the page of Shulchan Aruch, which is where do you take the dam out from? where do you take the dam out from? So there is a way it was always done, and apparently the Chazon Ish came along and like changed the world. Now, I was a little confused. It's a little confusing because it talks about above and below, but I'm not sure which direction it's going. And it seems like different sources were talking about it in the opposite direction. You know, what's below the Atara and above the Atara? The Atara is described as that where the glands begins. So which way is up and which way is down is a bit of a shaila. And both and they seem to be, and it seemed to me that there were people talking about it and not necessarily using the same descriptions. But in Nishvas Avram, it spells out that if the baby, essentially there's no force, so there's no reason whatsoever to say Tavas Dambrish should be done from the Atara, for why should the Atara be involved? Tavas Dambrish should be done from the edge of the skin where the foreskin was removed. That the general minug was to do it when they say above the Atara, meaning closer to the body. That was the general minhag. Along comes the Chazon Ish and has a language of you may as well give the kid a nosebleed, right? That's not considered the makom hamila. So rather, the Chazon Ish felt that it had to be someplace in the attire, in what's known in the glands area. From the attire itself. And not below it, and a side closer to the body. So there, the Chazon Ish is using the term lamata, while here he was using lamala, right? So that's a back and forth. And the way he writes it as v'zek kematif dam min ha'etzpa, to take off blood above the atara, meaning closer to the body, that's like taking blood from its finger. But over mishum lo yosef, and not only that, but you violate a din. What are you doing? Giving the kid a cut, right? You're causing the kid pain for absolutely no reason. So the Chazon Ish said that no, it has to be from the atara itself. So what do they do? I think Lamaisa they sort of do both. I mean, it's really like it's like a paper cut. It's really very little that it's going on, but they'll take sort of like from the glands to the middle part to the bottom part. And the whole thing is a half a centimeter. It's really not very much, but that is the spot that is.
It's not a very big. You know, I went to all this debate about, but you know, the penis on a like, you know, a newborn.
Just right. Right, right, no, it's not very large, but you got to get it. So he's pointing out. I've never been involved with a newborn. I have been involved with seeing it with adults. Right, and the idea and the minhag is to do both. The minhag is to sort of get that crossover section. Okay. Where they're both. he writes here, he says that the psak today, sheish lachu sheshnei adei, yusul lahatif dam mishnei makomus, and to take from the two spots. Avabanolin mahul yeshakasu sheyachul lahatif rachmi atar atzma. Okay. Veroi, and then he adds in here, veroi shamol yuvakish mechila mehanimol, mishum iser chavala shelo letzorach. So because part of it's not necessary. You only have to take from one or the other. So we don't know which one to do. So we're taking it both misafik. So apparently the moel, there's a minhag for the moel to ask mechila from who he's giving a bris to, saying, sorry, we couldn't be machriya this machlokas. I'm going to have to take blood from the two different spots. And then in the footnote here, he says, well, maybe you don't have to ask mechila because the person getting the bris should be understanding that you're just doing the best that you can, and just because you can't be machriya the machlokas and causing a little bit more, he's willing to accept that extra pain in order to make sure he's being fulfilling the mitzvah. So it's a bit of machlokas whether
about an adult or even the baby.
I would answer yes, but it's pretty amazing. I mean, the minhag was totally one way, and the Chazon Ish said, no, you guys have been doing it all wrong. For all these years, you've been doing it all wrong. That's a pretty amazing thing. Then there's one further machlokas here that is discussed of, do all of the concerns about the baby being sick, do that apply to a tafas dambris? It's really nothing. Very little is going to happen. So do you say, oh, well, the baby is sick, so we're going to postpone it. So he quotes here, From the Maram Shik quotes from the Chassam Sofer that yes, that the baby's a chole, you can't do a tavas dambris. So in Nishmas Avram he says, I found that very difficult to accept. Why if a tavas dambris is so is such a small thing, why are we so nervous? Especially because all the doctors are taking blood from the kid all the time, right? The doctors are coming and they're taking blood tests all the time. So if the doctors are taking blood tests, doesn't that tell us that it's not dangerous to do a tavas damris? So he said that Rav Norworth explained to him, the author of the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa, that no, that tavas damris is a din of mila. And if the child is not ro'i lemila, if the child is not ready to have a bris because he has some type of illness, so then you can't do the bris. So the tavas damris is replacing the bris. So if the child is not brisable, so then you shouldn't be doing a tavas damris either. Not because it's dangerous, but because the child is not ro'i lekach. The child is not fit for that at that time. Fine, and then we get to Sif Hei. So in Sif Hei here, he says, Tinok Shemes Kodim Sheagil Yos Ben Ches, if the child dies before he's reached 8 days old, Malan Aso Al Kevro Betura Bekana. Kana, so is that language, you give the bris there at the kever. Ve'im Varchin Al Hamila. Aval Masimin Lo Sham Lezecher, Shirach Miu Mina Shemai, Ve'yichi B'tiyah Semesim. You do it as a simon that he should have Rachmim, and that Tchiyah Semesim will happen. Fine. So the okay. So you don't have to wait for the eighth day for this to happen. If the baby's died, so it died. And also, even if the child is not, even if the child was, you know, was sick and didn't have a bris because it was sick, and then died at 16 days old. So the same thing. You would do the bris before he is buried. Now there is a Piskei Tshuvos here in Yud Aleph Piskei Tshuvos. Yeah, that one? Yes. So Kodem. Ayin Berahitim Mashkas Vashem Knesset Yecheskel. Vayim Betshuvos Nodeb Yehuda. Tinyana Chelik Yeradeya Simen Kuf Sanach Dal Shekasov. Deim Hu Eze Yamim Achar Moso Ein Liftoach HaKever. Shalom Liros Bin Nivlaso. So I assume the Knesset Yisrael would say, Ayin Berahitim. Ayin Berahitim is on the page. Where he quotes this, that if the baby was already buried, meaning they, and then all of a sudden, hey, wait a second, did you give the kid the bris? So, I mean, Rabbi Rosenblatt told me that he did it himself with parents who had this. So he went, actually I have a friend who was the father of such a baby. And he, you know, instead of calling the mo'el, he just did the bris himself. There's actually a din of only cutting off the atara and not doing what's known as priya, which is the next simon. So he would just do it himself. So you know, maybe people didn't know. So all of a sudden, hey, someone 2 days later, after the child was buried already, someone says, hey, by the way, did you do the bris thing? And the father's like, well, yeah. So says the so the Ber Hativ here quotes that that you should even if it means taking the child out, digging out the child, that you should still go ahead and do that bris. Comes the Nodeb Yehuda and says, yeah, that might be if it's within a day or two. But if it's already a couple of days, ein liftoach hakever shel liros binivlo. It's not worth doing if the child has already begun to decompose. He says, however, achim b'tshuvos, I don't know, Knesset Yecheskel, shenira shedaitu da'av achar zman achar mosupokim, that even if it is a couple of days later, still you should do it. And then he says, v'ayim b'tshuvos mi'ir nesivim simen mem zayin shekasav, and I don't know if this is done or not, shekasav dim, and hopefully it doesn't happen very often, but dim ira shelo kavru esanefil ad shemesig gam hayuledes, that they held out, I assume it means that the mother died also in childbirth, that they both died together. So the minog, the kavru es hanefel ima, they would bury the child with the mother. Al yad yamina, on the right side of the mother, v'shachachu lamol es hanefel, ein poskan es hakever. That if that's a situation where the child is actually buried with the mother, so then you would not go ahead and do that. If al kor in lo shem, but you would still give the name, as is being described. So I don't know. That's an interesting idea. I don't know what the meaning is to that of burying the mother along with the child, but apparently there was such a minhag.
But you don't open it up.
Right, you wouldn't open it up under that scenario. Huh? Yeah. What I found interesting there is that this minhag exists. That there's a minhag on the books apparently of doing that.
The fact that the child decomposes raises a question. You know, what's the embarrassment of not being circumcised when you're buried, because time.
You're decomposing anyways.
Yeah, I don't know what. I don't know how.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know what happens when you
chias amesim. Right, some chias amesim are not.
That one.
Yeah.
Maybe you come back the way you were. I don't know.
So then the Ramah here quotes two halachos about this. The Ramah then adds in. He says, "Ve'ein osin kein afil biyomtov sheni shel goyos." You would not do this, however, on the second day of Yontif. The aser likfor biyomtov hanefalin. The tefilah tatalo aser. That there is an isser of burying, of doing these burials on Yom Tov, even on Yom Tov Sheni. What do you mean, even on Yom Tov Sheni? So in theory, a person who passes away, that's mutter. That we in our communities we don't do it. Bizman hazeh, but certainly in the Mishnah it describes doing burials on the second day of Yom Tov, even on the first day of Yom Tov. Well, they don't have a second day of Yom Tov in Eretz Yisrael. But on the
someone said they did it in broilers.
Yes, so there. Except for in very, if you have a very organized, I mean, the problem is there's problems to it, right? So the Mishnah says in the Seches Beitza, if a person dies on Yontif, you can have non-Jews bury them on the first day of Yontif, and on the second day of Yontif, you can have Jews burying them. So Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he says that we don't do this. First of all, we have refrigeration, mizman hazeh, right? And second of all, it's going to lead to hafkeiros. What does he mean? So like, yeah, who does what? I mean, it used to be in the days where, yeah, you would take the body to outside of town and dig up a thing, put it in, and bury it. But nowadays, the Beis HaKfaros isn't a 5-minute walk. It's a right. So does that mean you're allowed to drive to the Beis HaKfaros? And if you say yeah, you are allowed to drive, you can make a case that maybe you could drive. So you're allowed to drive back. And how many people are allowed to drive? Right? Who's supposed to be involved with this? So if in very organized communities, I think like the Bubba of a Rebbetzin also like died on Shavuos and they did a burial on the second day of Shavuos or something. But so I think in organized very or in Breuers where you have a very organized community, you can make it happen. But I don't even know if Bizman said it's still done. But apparently says the Ramah, it wouldn't apply to a nefel. So it's unclear what exactly is the chi of kavura when it comes to a nefel. So the
put them in unmarked. They put them in a regular grave with a monument. I didn't think that they.
Yeah, I don't think they do. I don't think it's not like a private ceremony someplace sort of to the side. There was in the precinct. One of the recent OU magazines, Rabbi Friedman, who is the rabbi in Harrisburg, wrote an essay about it. Apparently, he did it for his own child, or he was describing doing it with a congregant, but he had it. Take a look there. He talks about the experience of doing this. The Nishpas Avram does have a discussion about the burial on the second day of Yontif.
So this is really a burial question.
What?
This whole issue here is really a burial. Somebody comes in here, he's talking about a baby.
Right, so...
I mean, if you're not going to bury him, you don't need to do the...
Yeah, so not everybody agrees with this psak. He quotes from the Gesher HaChaim, who probably would be the... After the latest word on this, that although the accepted ruling is that there is no positive mitzvah to bury an Eifel, and therefore it's not buried on Yontif, nevertheless, we do bury it for other reasons. These are either because it's forbidden to have any benefit from the Nefel, and you shouldn't have it around, because of the fear of Tumah, and because of the fear of Kohanim, and so that it will have Tchiyas HaMesim. So the Gesher HaChaim continues that the accepted ruling is not that of the Magen Avraham. For his opinion, you cannot have a rule of the Chachamim, the Shulchan Aruch, and his opinion is strongly opposed by others. However, the Kolbo Avelus writes that although the great poskim were divided on the question of whether there is an obligation to bury a Nefel, virtually all have ruled that there is an obligation to bury it, so we do bury it, but I don't think we bury it on Yontif, and that would, of course, also actually do the bris if you need to bury it on Yontif. I think that also plays into this discussion. One more, and then all of a sudden the Ramah throws in here, which is like a little odd place to put it, but then he says, oh, by the way, Aser Lamal Ovikal Chavim Shalul Hashem Geirus, Afilu B'chol. By the way, there's a prohibition of giving a bris to Ovdei Kochavim, even as if it doesn't have anything to do with Geirus, even during the week. Not allowed to give a bris to Geirus, to Gaim. That's a big problem, right? It's a problem for all for Jewish doctors. And what's the story there? So the Shach here has a discussion where the Shach says that what's the reason for this? So one possibility is that there's some kind of isser, and one of the Rishonim say this, that there's an isser in like adding the the adding a non-Jew, giving him a bris. Meaning there's a problem with the kedusha of the bris being bestowed upon a non-Jew, besides the fact that it could also lead to some issues of confusion later on. However, the Shach seems to decide that it is a more technical issue of to asur l'refuah some, that you're not allowed to heal. That there is a Gemara Maseches Avodah Zarah. I think we did this when we learned Hilchos Avodah Zarah, where you're not allowed to give medical treatment to non-Jews as long as they're not paying you for it. But if they're paying you for it, then you'd have to, because otherwise that would lead to all sorts of disasters. So so that's where the Shach seems to lie. Shach seems to say that, yeah, if you're not being paid for it, you should do it. But if you're getting paid for it, so then you can't. Not only that, but there also is, people do practice, there are Moalim who practice on Arabs, that is a thing. And therefore, how are you allowed to do that? It's a prohibition of of giving the bris to non-Jews. So so he says, so it's for our benefit. It's for if we want to do it, so then we'd be permitted to. There might be another reason to give to them as well.
Does this apply to Muslims?
Yes. So 1 second.
How old are the Muslims when they get circumcised?
Yeah, they don't wait to the 13. Yeah. There might be a few Hasidim, but other than that, they're not waiting till they're 13.
So when do they do it?
I think.
When they're babies.
Yeah, they pass like Yitzchak. earlier on, maybe they do a toughest dambris. I'm not sure. I'm not an expert. But the Pisgei Tshuva here. Does seem to Paskin like that idea of the Shach. I seem to recall when I had this Mila Shirim in Tzmichu with Rav Tendler, he seemed to imply that Rav Moshe was Machmer on this Shaila. But I remember one of the people in class whose wife was a doctor, freaking out. Like, oh my gosh, my wife's not allowed.
Machmer on giving...
Machmer on this and not allowed to give bris to non-Jews, right?
Hmm.
I think, but I don't recall if that exactly what was going on. I was still wondering who Billy Rubin was at that point in this year. And then finally, there is a long Pisgei Tshuva here that discusses that there is an idea of giving a bris to Bnei Keturah, the rest of the children of Avraham, and it could be that the Bnei Yishmael are part of the Bnei Keturah or have mixed enough together with them that there might be an Indian giving them a bris. I noticed that as choir practice was ending, so I didn't have a chance to really work on it, so maybe next week we'll figure out what this Pisgei Tshuva is on the topic. I think I do actually have a shir on Yayi Torah on it, about giving bris to Bnei Keturah from when I gave shir on Bereishis, but maybe that will be for next week.